Hi guys, my name is Jeff Hamilton, and I have the privilege of being your facilitator today. I love student and children's ministry. I would probably be the next gen overseer at our church context. I am a 25-year student ministry veteran that's been demoted to senior pastor. And we are glad to have you in today's session. Got some great folks that are here with us. Let me first introduce to my far right, Todd and Aaron Funk. Todd and Aaron Funk serve with Pastor Jerry Dearman at The Rock in Anaheim. They are a great addition to our team today, as they started out as children's workers volunteers. And they currently serve on staff as young adults. If you get a chance, they have a little website. I was checking it out the other day. They just did a very spiritual discipleship-oriented activity at downtown Disney, where it was a game of massive hide-and-go-seek in costume. So those are some cool pictures. I think you had to stay with the long 80s rocker, the blonde. Yeah, it was really nice.
I wore a fat suit, and I had a mullet.
Speaking of which, that's what I have on today. I borrowed it.
But the funniest part was one of our team members, who's a police officer,
talking to the microphone. We're going to be doing this all day, so you.
The funny part was, is this even working?
Yes.
Okay.
It is.
One of our team members is a police officer, and he wore this wig and khaki pants, and he looked like the Unabomber. Anyway, he got in trouble with the Anaheim police, which was quite interesting. So it was a fun time.
Immediately to my right is Lynn Sawyer. She currently is the life stage pastor at New Hope, which is in Hilo, Hawaii. But Lynn has done as well a little bit of everything at children's minister at local churches for a while. She served our denomination as a practitioner point person for as our national children's ministry director, and she has been involved with Pastor Kelly Fellows as the next gen rep. What district was it? The Gateway?
No, I was at the national
level. At the national level.
But the next
gen
rep for Hawaii.
Next gen rep for Hawaii.
Next gen rep for Hawaii.
So our discussion today is about the principles and practices of next-gen integration. And because of her involvement at the national level and now working that out at the local church, Lynn, why don't you maybe just describe for us that title and what you feel even that title is, the principles and practices of integrating next-gen ministry.
When we started the Next Gen, it was a blessing for me to hear that, because having been in children's ministry for so long, and I mean for so long, guys, I have been privileged to watch the kids in my first Sunday school ministry at Faith Center in Eugene, Oregon. There are a lot of Foursquare pastors that came out of that era. In fact, I saw one of them going down the escalator, and he had gray hair, and that just blew me away. But anyway, I have been privileged, being in the ministry so long, to have watched these kids grow into adults, and having seen all the different transitions, and more convinced than ever that we have to have a strategy of integrating ministry and of making sure that at each level we don't lose or don't stunt the growth of our children, youth, and young adults. So the whole concept is that we have an overall strategy in mind, that we have a big picture mentality. When we see children, we see the adults that they're going to become, and how do we as leaders facilitate those seamless transitions between the different age levels so that at each age level they are continuing their growth in the Lord, they're continuing to be discipled. And the only way we can do that is if our leadership is integrated. If we share a common vision, if we share common goals, if we share an integrated mentality that says we're all going to work together to make sure that we're going to see these kids from birth through young adult have that kind of experience where their growth is going to continue. Maybe I should let these
That's
guys
great.
Go.
Well, okay. As we're talking, that was
uh-huh.
perfect.
Okay.
And just to let you guys know a couple things that you might would be helpful to get the most out of this session. Actually, we'll do. There's going to be little key words or key phrases that you're going to hear individuals use that we're going to want to dialogue about in a little bit. This is not going to hopefully be a session as powerful as what we've experienced in the main sessions have been. We want this to be a much more interactive thing, and for it to be interactive, it also means you have to interact. And so there's going to be concepts, there's going to be terms that are going to come to mind. I would just have you kind of jot it down somewhere, or even if it's just words or concepts. Beautiful. Would somebody mind passing those out? Because what we want to do, this is, I think that it's really cool that in this particular room you have a life stage pastor who's worked in, who is now responsible for implementing this kind of strategy. You have practitioners who are implementing these kinds of vision as practitioners, and I love drawing from this because as a senior pastor, this is my goal to see this kind of approach integrated. One of the first things that, it's interesting how so much of this kind of starts with what we would call a prophetic word or assignment. And one of the first times that I was exposed, not through a resource, but through a real clearly articulated sense of assignment was through Pastor Kimberly Dearman. Kim happens to be my district supervisor, but at that time she was the children's ministry director at her church. And she presented a ministry vision for their church. Lynn was talking about common vision and goals. Todd and Aaron have been serving. How long have you guys been serving at the... You'll need to pick up the microphone. How long have you guys been serving at The Rock? It's been 10 years, 9 years?
Yeah, a little over 8 years.
A little over 8 years. And so they came in under a ministry mandate called the David Generation that kind of sets the direction. Can you guys talk a little bit about that and how in the different stages or places where you served, how you've seen that continue to be a driving force for what you do?
Yeah, our jobs really have been very easy in the sense that our pastors have a very clear vision of what they want Next Gen Ministries to look like. And so Pastor Kimberly spoke and she shared about the David Generation. And that became the driving force for our Next Gen Ministries. And that was her vision, that was her passion. And really the David generation, what that is that David, while he was still a boy, was identified by the prophet Samuel. And Samuel anointed him and spoke destiny over him and released him. And we know that David went on to slay giants while he was yet a boy. And so that became the mandate for The Rock, and that while our kids were still young, that we were to speak prophetic destiny over them, and we were to release them into ministry while they were still children. Instead of waiting and training and just well, they're not ready yet. They just have to learn more of the word. They need to learn, you know, and as we go through, and we never give them an opportunity to serve. But that's not what happened with David. And so we've adopted that principle into our ministries, starting as early as our Next Gen Ministries is Cradle to College. And while they are in the nursery, our nursery workers lay hands on those children like Samuel's and speak prophetic destiny over them. They call them out as giant slayers. They call them out as world changers. Then when they go into Treasure Island, which is our children's ministry, we begin to speak over them who they are as a David generation. And you know the scripture where you write the vision, you make it plain on tablets so that they may run who reads it. And so we've written on the wall in Treasure Island what the David generation looks like. And it says, we are a David generation. We love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. We know who we are in Christ. We have the faith and courage to do whatever God says, and we fulfill God's purpose. And so everything that we do in children's ministry centers around that statement.
Now, let me just kind of jump in there for a minute to bring a practical. Everybody here is from a Foursquare church, is that correct? Now, how many of you, semi-Foursquare, how many of you guys have a scripture that's somewhere at the front of your auditorium?
Yep.
Who? Yeah. And do you remember what it is? Hebrews 13:8, which says, Jesus Christ the same yesterday, today, and forever. In fact, according to our bylaws, come on in. According to our bylaws, that is supposed to be on the front wall of every Foursquare church. Don't call my district supervisor. It's not yet at the front of mine. But the reason why, can somebody tell me why that's there? Why is it there? It doesn't have to do with like the like. Why would you put something up on the wall like that?
It's a memorial.
Remember by repetition, and what else? People know what you're about. When we talk about practices, simple little practices, one of the little take homes I'd like to really point out to you is: can you articulate your vision, and who sees it? Right? Can you just, even if it's a whiteboard that you put out every Sunday in your put up and tear down church, can you write down the vision of the children's ministry? Right. Can you write down the vision of the youth ministry? And the vision should be the same. We're going to come back and talk to this. These are little things that I'm going to maybe as these guys have opportunity to practice. Come up with very simple ways that we can implement some of these things in our strategy. I want to go back to Lynn, as Lynn had the privilege of resourcing our children's ministry nationally and helping to create this kind of identity. One of the things we've been talking about a long time is all of this integration, and we usually don't have issues as at this level of leader wanting to integrate. The challenges come at the upper levels. Can you talk to us a minute about how do you begin to initiate these kinds of conversations about integrating ministry and things like that?
Well, the first place you have to start is with your senior pastor. And you have to have shared vision with your senior pastor. And I'll just take Hilo as an example. You know, the very fact that we call it Life Stage Ministry is indicative of our vision for all of the different ages being integrated. And that starts from the top. And so each leader has a shared vision of how we are going to implement God's design and purpose from our babies through our college age. So it has to begin with your senior staff. It really does. So if you haven't had a conversation like that with your pastor before, sit down with him. Find out what his heart is about how to disciple the kids in your church. Find out what his vision is for reaching, you know, the young generation and the now generation and the next generation or whatever you want to call it, and align yourself with his vision, with his or her vision. Okay.
What if he doesn't have a vision?
Then you help him get one. You share your heart and you talk about how you are ministering to these children or these youth and what's happening in those ministries. What do you see as the needs? What do you see as the climate of that generation? You talk about things like where you want to see these kids head. No matter what age group you're working with, how many children's pastors do we have in here? Okay.
And while you got your hands up, how many of you are on some type of paid staff where you're actually getting paid for hours that you put in at the church?
Okay, good.
Great.
Good.
What's that?
Children.
Let's just specifically children, first
nursery
through
elementary. Okay.
And what about youth pastors?
Youth pastors.
Too? Okay. And the guys who are here, you are compensated as well for whether it's full time or part time as well. Excellent.
Good. So as part of the pastoral team of your church, you have God has given you vision for what He wants to do with the kids in your church. He has given you that vision already, and that needs to be shared with your senior pastor. So that you're all on the same age. And you also need to communicate your desire to have a common vision with him, that you guys want to work together as a whole church in reaching kids cradle through college age, that you want to have a shared vision for that, because what you want to do is you don't want to be implementing something in children's that doesn't lead into your youth ministry. I thought it was really fun. I have been on staff at New Hope for almost 2 years, and so I've been through 1 year of like transitioning my sixth graders into middle school, and we have a sort of a welcome fun event for the new sixth graders going into, you know. So I thought, well, I should be there. You know, these are my kids that I'm, you know, going to help transition into middle school, and so I went to the event, and you know what they treated me like? The little Dickens, like, oh, Mom, please, why are you here? You know, go away. But yeah, we're big kids. I don't need you here. And that blessed my heart that they were ready to go to middle school. You know, they still sneak back in every once in a while, especially on Wednesday nights when we're doing fun stuff. But that blessed my heart. And that's what we want. We want them to be excited to go to the next level of ministry. We want them to look at that as an opportunity. I get to grow some more. I'm becoming the big kid, you know. And I love it that you shared about Kimberly's vision for the David generation, because it starts with nursery. It starts with the little ones. And God has a design. What is it? Psalms 139. Or no, let's do Ephesians 2:10, you know, that he has gifted and anointed us. So, you know, from birth. So from before we were even conceived, you know, he has a plan and a purpose for each of our lives. And we need to seize upon that from the very beginning, not wait for them to find out their calling. You know, God already has a plan and a design for them. And then the other thing I wanted to say, too, is when you're talking to your pastor, your senior group, you cannot talk about integrated ministry without talking about the value of holistic ministry to families. Families have to be, and that, you know, when you integrate ministry, that sets your church up to involve families and to strengthen families and to make them the foundation of integrating your ministries, because you want to train your families to be a part of all of this.
Okay. Before we go back to Todd and Aaron, they have a pretty well-established vision. We'll talk about how to implement that. I want to stay with Lynn for a minute, but I want to ask you a question. How many of you guys feel that you have a good sense of your senior pastor's vision And he's articulated something about the whole church. This is where we're going as the whole church. And you can see where that trickle down and know where you fit into that. Oh, what's this mean? Pastor's been there for 2 years and he's just kind of coming into vision now. So that's just kind of unpacking.
I think vision goes beyond.
A vision is what. I mean, mission is. Those are all. You know, you're getting somebody into asking me who's been over Maxwellized. Do you guys know who I'm talking about? Okay. Although I'm very grateful for all that. It's kind of like values. Values are not what you believe. Values are what you do. Okay, so then let me rephrase it this way. There is both vision and values. Your pastor may not have he may have a vision, but does he have, let me put it this way, does he have a value? Is it working its way out, some type of implemented strategy that you feel that you're able to be a part of and contribute to? Let me ask this. How many of you would say, not yet? 6 weeks. Oh, okay. So what does that mean? What does 6 weeks mean? Yes.
And
well, and I just want to encourage you, be patient. All this stuff takes a long time. I have stepped into a new ministry assignment where I actually merged my church in with another and assumed a leadership. And it's taken me 4 years to where I can even get to the place where I can begin to implement some of these things. Remember, the one thing that we always have is that ministry is long haul. And sometimes it takes a while for us to impact. For all you married people in here, how long did it take us to figure out how to be married? Right? Exactly right. Lynn, that I wanted to just come back to. How does a staff, you know, unless you have a senior pastors come in all different shapes, sizes, visions, directions, giftings, talents, you know, I'm the guy you want at our church if you need help developing curriculum. I'm not the guy you want if you have to go to visit the hospital. That's just not so. Your guy might be really good at hospital or at managing the new building project and not so hot on, well, I believe in kids, you know, do whatever is in your heart. How does somebody develop a team, a common vision, and how do you start to kind of unpack that?
Okay. Well, we have a life stage team. And so we regularly meet, and we have a saying, let me back up. Our senior pastor used to be the youth pastor, so he gets this. And his heart's desire is that we integrate every age group. That's his vision and his goal, and always has been. In fact, I have been going over to Hilo for the past almost 20 years, for like 16, 17 years before I ever went on staff there doing conferences and stuff, and got to see the first, the launching of their life stage ministry, and met my pastor when he was the youth pastor. So this is not a new thing at New Hope, but they have life stage. They have a saying called All Hearts on Deck. And so whenever there's a children's event,
write that down.
All hearts on deck. Whenever there's a children's event, every age group is involved in that. The youth serve at it. In fact, it just blew me away when I used to go over and do children's conferences for the Hawaii district, and the youth were the ones that were there serving us, and they would do everything for us. And Sheldon would say to me, I can't imagine our youth not serving those who are serving and training up my next youth group. I mean, it's looking at the big picture. Our seniors are intimately involved in with our kids and our youth, and vice versa. Every single age group is. So the leaders of those ministries, we regularly meet. And how can I serve you? If youth is doing something, how can we be a part of that? You know, sometimes it's financially. Sometimes it's with giving of our time. But again, when you build a team, your children's pastor, your youth pastor, your young adult pastor, when you're building those teams, you guys meet regularly and make sure that your vision and your purpose is aligned and that you are willing to serve in those different areas, because we're all in it together.
See, we're talking about vision, but what else? That's where the values come in, right? Values are not just what you believe. Values are what you do. And so we see an integrated, you know, there's multiple ways to integrate ministries. One is through the way you facilitate ministry. A curriculum based, hey, we're all going to do this, and it all kind of tracks together, and the whole church moves together. If you want a resource for that, that's there's a book called The Big Idea by Dave Ferguson that talks about how to do that. It's a curriculum kind of oriented approach to church ministry. And that's one way to practice the integration. But this kind of integration, what we're talking about, is values-driven integration. And ultimately, the behavior, following Jesus is not just modifying behavior. It is about living our lives sacrificially the way that Jesus did, and we get a chance to do that,
right?
Teach them how to do that this way.
The other aspect to this, the next level, is you integrate your kids. So what you are doing is releasing young leaders. And what we do is, I have a lot of the kids who have left children's ministry. They are integrated back into children's ministry at different levels as helpers and that kind of thing. So we are raising up leaders in every area. Our high schoolers, they serve, you know, our seniors. Our high schoolers are, you know, so we are, you know, in every aspect, you are thinking integration. It isn't just about whether or not they feel comfortable going to the next age level. It's how are they involved in the different age levels. So it's kind of a circle here. You know, you are raising them up and they go to the next level, but then they begin to give back to the younger generation as well. And, you know, it's been kind of fun for me being the next gen director for Hawaii too, because most of the time like I said, I've been in children's ministry for so long. You know, all those kids have grown up, and they're adults, and they have kids and all of that. So so I've been involved with young people and young adults as well. But I don't feel like that's my expertise. So I'm having a blast right now being involved with these youth leaders and the young adult leaders and learning from them about what the needs are, what the culture is, and how we can further the integration of ministry. And, you know, it's like my vision for our young people and releasing some emerging leaders in our district is that they will give both ways, that they're going to affect their generation and beyond, but they're going to be the young leaders that affect the younger generation. You know, my vision is to do a kid lead summit, and I want those young leaders to be involved in teaching my fourth to sixth graders what leadership is all about. Those are the kind of things that we need to be thinking about. And so integration isn't just, you know, and seamless transitions isn't just that they feel comfortable going to the next age level. Again, it's more than that. It's how do we release leaders to affect not only future generations, but the upcoming, their generation, but the upcoming generations as well.
I love that about, we're not just talking about how to make seamless transitions. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about just how we make a good baton handoff. You know, really using that illustration, you know, in order to have a baton handoff, you have to have somebody reaching forward and somebody reaching back to keep the thing moving forward.
And I did want to clarify too. It's, you know, you talked about curriculum. Integration isn't just, it goes beyond curriculum.
Yes.
Okay. Because sometimes different age levels require different things, you know, and we use orange. You know, it's like we do something different in our youth groups, and you know, it's like it's okay to be age specific. We want to be age appropriate when we're ministering to those age groups. That's not something we shy away from. But integration goes beyond that, and I hope I've communicated that.
Absolutely.
That it is not just about a curriculum.
Well, how many of you guys have been at your church longer than 5 years in your current role? Okay, good. Todd, Aaron, you guys have been doing this 8 years, volunteer. Staff, children's ministry, young adults. Talk to us about the outcomes of an integrated ministry. You've been there long enough to get to see. In student ministry, we always think generationally, right? 4 years. Always 4 years, pockets, kind of youth ministry. Take the microphone and let's talk about what have been some of the outcomes that you have seen in the lives of kids and students. The church that at the Rock, well, they have a number of healthy, wonderful families. They too face a lot of the challenges of a single parent issues, a latchkey kid issues, can you speak to us a little bit about the outcomes of taking an approach to ministry like this? Sure. I'm gonna just for the recording's sake, I'm gonna restate your question and see if we can answer it. The question was asked if we were talking about integrated ministry as far as how to integrate my ministry into the rest of the church, or about integrating the ministries together so that there's the same flow. We're talking about the latter. How to see a pattern of developing followers of Jesus from cradle to college, and what that would look like for us to do that. And again, uniquely positioned is Todd and Aaron, who've had experience in that. And what have been the benefits? What have been the outcome? What have been the changes that have taken place in the church, and how has that affected having an approach to ministry like that?
Yeah, well, it helps, again, to have a clear vision from your pastors. And so we started out as volunteers when we just opened Treasure Island, and we were age group directors. So we had to develop teams for multiple age groups, and we had 15 services that we oversaw, and we had 175 volunteers underneath us just for our classrooms. And so,
closer, please.
And then we had the privilege of traveling with J-12. J-12 is a ministry from fourth through sixth graders, and we traveled with J-12 for a year, and so we got to be involved intimately with that age group. And we have four children, and our children are in every age group, and so we get to experience it from that view. And now we're on the end where we're the young adult pastors, and so we're getting the product of those kids that were in our kids' classrooms are now in youth and coming up into young adults. And we're seeing just that consistency between, because we had a healthy integration of all the ministries, and it doesn't matter what their economic status is, it doesn't matter if they're a single parent home, it doesn't matter what their background is, we've been speaking to them from the time they step foot on our campus. You're a David generation, you're going to slay giants. And boy, when you tell children something, they believe it. and they'll continue to believe it until an adult talks them out of it. And because our senior pastors have been saying over and over and over again, this is a Javid generation, and this is not a secondary ministry, this is the primary ministry of our church, because they're up and coming. And really, that you could tell the health of your church by your children's ministry and your youth ministry and what's going on with kids. And so we have a huge volunteer base at our church because the needs are so great. And so we have articulated to these kids, our vision statement for our church is come here, do. And so they've been coming this whole time as children. They've been hearing, but then we give them the opportunity to do. And so the do is a huge part. We don't wait for them to go up to the next level. We have kids ministering to their peer groups as kids in class. And then obviously we want the older generations to be ministering to the younger generations. But I'll tell you what, those younger generations minister to the older generations.
That's right.
We have our children doing healing services in the adults' services, laying hands on the sick, and they're being healed. Our kids are doing that, ministering in front of adults. And so we've seen that the outcomes of having this holistic approach is beautiful, and it's really seamless because they're excited to move on to the next level because they're seeing it in action. They're seeing our young adults acting. They're seeing our youth in action. They're seeing the J-12ers in action. And so they just can't wait to jump up to the next level because they can't wait to serve.
I don't know if you hear as well with this, the intergenerational. When we talk about an integrated model, it is also intergenerational. Todd, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to expand a little bit on what Aaron was saying and really dig into the do part. And that common thread is serving. And just give a couple of examples of how we see these kids serve. We talk about a kids ministry that takes hundreds of volunteers to run it every weekend. Well, about 100 of them are what we call junior helpers. So these kids are integrated right in with the adults, and they're serving right alongside. In addition to that, you also see these kids that have been trained up in worship, and you'll see young people as young as 12 years old on our main platform in the adult services, playing instruments and being part of the worship services. So these kids are given the opportunity to really kind of stretch out and learn to fly, so to speak, and be involved.
One of the things that when we talk about very simple practices, intergenerational, interfamily, one of the simple things that we do is whenever there's a men's gathering, if you're in fourth grade or up, you're a man. You come with your dad, and you come to the men's meet. If you're a kid who comes to the church who doesn't have a dad, we'll make arrangements for somebody to be your dad that day. And that way they get to have those kinds of integrations. We got about 10 minutes for some questions, which is really one of the best parts. And I'm going to bring my microphone to you guys so that your question can get recorded. Anybody have question, comment, thought? We'll start here. And just say your name real quick, what church you're serving, and then your comment.
Okay. I'm Gina Horner.
You can hold this yourself.
Okay. I'm Gina Horner.
I would like that.
Could you do that? And we're at North Rock Church outside of Denver. I'm on my seventh month of doing children's ministry. We've done youth for over a decade, and I just am wondering, what would you think for me the things that would be the most important for me to set up in this first year of my children's ministry?
So you're the head of your children's ministry. I would say you got to go to the foundation. What is the vision? What's the vision for your children's ministry? What is the outcome? What do you want your children to look like when they leave children's ministry? And this is our parenting philosophy. We begin with the end in mind. What do you want them to look like? And then you build that backwards. And then you have your foundation. And if you can get your team to buy into your vision, there's nothing, absolutely nothing, that will stop you.
Well, after the foundation of the vision, you know, then it's building your team. And that's probably key. The very key is building a good team to minister to the kids. So that's the major part of your work right now, is that beyond curriculum, beyond anything else, it's that team and imparting that vision to them and getting everybody on board.
Another question.
This is in reference to just the whole David generation term there. And so basically from my understanding, what I'm hearing from you is that you're basically trying to empower the kids from cradle to college, saying that they have this power inside of them and just kind of revealing to them, oh, you really do have strength and you can, God can use you at this age and everything. Do you find that in the age groups that you were working in that not all are, like, as receptive as the others to what you try to tell them and try to empower them? Because I've been on this whole discipleship thing for a while, too, just really trying to capitalize on that in my ministries and everything, starting, like, a discipleship program just for the ones that, you know, seem really, really promising. Do you find that some of them aren't very receptive to that and don't grasp onto that, you know, David generation mindset? And how do you deal with that?
Yeah, well, the vision always stays the same. You know, and Jesus taught on levels. You know, he taught to the masses, and then he pulled his 12 in, or his disciples, and then he pulled the 12 in. And so with children, you know, you cast the vision to them, you speak into them, and this is who you are, this is what it says. You know, some are going to get it, and some aren't. But here's the deal. You know, when we were in children's ministry, I always, you know, that you always have those ones that you're like, they just aren't getting it. You know what I mean? And the Holy Spirit arrested me in that, and he said, don't judge what's going on the outside, because the work of the Holy Spirit is all internal. And what my job is to just plant those seeds. And so I'm just purely a seed planter. And then somebody else will come along and water. And then somebody else will reap the harvest. But we all rejoice together. And so I'll never forget where I was when the Holy Spirit just said, Aaron, don't pay attention to those ones that are rolling around on the floor, picking their noses, who are falling asleep. Holy Spirit never sleeps. And the Holy Spirit that's on the inside of them is not a junior Holy Spirit. It's the same Holy Spirit, same power, same grace. Therefore, you keep speaking the vision. You keep speaking the truth. You keep speaking the word over them, and leave the rest to me.
One of the things I'm really enjoying about this conversation, especially as a senior pastor, is I know Todd and Aaron's pastor very well. I have had the privilege of being around Lynn a little bit. But you can hear how clearly they, as under-shepherds, are articulating the vision. It's not a parrot. It's coming out of their spirits. But I'm hearing all of the things that I've heard from Pastor Jerry and Kimberly for the, you know, 25 years that I've known them, as it comes back out. And your team is only, as Lynn was talking about, you know, what do? You got to build that team. Your team's going to only be as strong as what you are in owning what we do. One more question, and we'll...
I just wanted to say about the team thing again. What I tell leaders who are starting out as well is maybe your first team needs to be a prayer team. And you get three or four people together, and you...
Why is no one writing that
storm
down?
Storm heaven. For who's supposed to be called? You storm and ask the Lord of the harvest to send forth that team. Okay.
Powerful.
I also wanted to say real
quickly. Please.
I think that the evidence of an integrated ministry is that every age level understands what it means not just to do church or go to church, but to be the church. And that's what life stage ministry, that's what integrated ministry is all about. That's what Next Gen is all about. That our children, from the time that they can understand that, through our young adults, know what it means to be the church. And that's the success or the evidence of integrated ministry.
You know, you always got to have a measurable, right? And the measurables aren't always how many people are showing up or even how many people went through our class. And to have a simple measurable like that, whatever age they are, is also a huge thing. One last question.
You've been speaking a lot about teams. Speak to us a little bit about recruiting and how you do build that team.
Recruiting was something, and when we were asked to be in children's ministry, we said no. We said, you're crazy. We have four children. I homeschool. The last thing I want to do when I go to church is be in kids ministry. And then again, the Holy Spirit said, no, this is what I want you to do. But Pastor Kimberly didn't go after just one of us. She went after us as a couple. And every single one of the age group directors for Kids Church was a couple. And so we built our teams. First of all, we bought into her vision, and we became really, really passionate about it. And see, passion is contagious. And so when you start speaking passion and what's going on in kids ministry and everything, because it's at a paradigm, because people, when they hear kids ministry, I don't care how well you articulate kids ministry, they hear babysitting. Right? But when you say, hey, our kids are doing a healing service, do you want to come and be involved? Say what? You know what I'm saying? So it's really, and how you cast vision to people, because we're not babysitting here. What we're doing is we're training the next generation of leaders, and it's how you articulate it. And if you're passionate about it, that passion's going to catch. And so we would go, and we would never apologize, and we went after high-level leaders in our church, and we went after couples, and we said, will you be a part of our team in speaking into the next generation? Here's what the Lord has given us. We're going to do a healing ministry. We're going to do this, and we're going to do that. And we're going to have prayer stations in our classroom. We're going to teach them how to pray. We're going to teach them about Amy Semple McPherson. Blah, blah. And they were like, where do we sign up? See, and then really our focus as age group directors was we were pastoring people, not the children. We were pastoring our team, and that's what you're going to be doing. Even though you're a children's pastor, you're going to be pastoring a team of people, and those team of people then you empower to pastor the children. And so we would then build our teams based on that. We brought in families to minister together and said, would your family come in and take this classroom? Would you as a couple build this team? And so it just proliferated. I mean, we had tons of volunteers that came in because, you know, everybody wants to do the latest and the greatest, right? Everybody wants to go where it's happening. Like, oh, it's happening over here. We want to go there. So you make it happening in Kids Church.
One of the biggest things that we learned quickly was that we all have a circle of influence, and we all have different circles of influence. But when you're trying to build a team, as Aaron said, we had 15 services that we had to staff every week. And if we didn't staff it, guess who got to do it? So we immediately went to the people that we had influence over or that we had connection with. But the Lord really dealt with us on that, and we ended up praying. Last resort, right? Well, I'm going to pray now. I mean, we're desperate. I need to pray. So we started praying that the Lord would highlight people to us that could be team members. And it was amazing. People that didn't make any sense, people that were busy, people that were older, people that were you know, had issues. And we started asking them, and they stepped up, and they turned out to be some of our best leaders and went on to, yeah, they're still in there 7-8 years later. So really pray that the Lord would identify people and be bold enough to step out and ask them.
I love
that. If it doesn't make sense, it's not God.
I would say the same for youth ministry without a doubt. And I really appreciated the idea of going after families. This is just my opinion. If there's a soapbox here, I would stand on it because of all of the challenges that the Big C Church has experienced, even with our brothers and sisters who are Catholic. There's been so many challenges of men working with children that it has made, there still is a vibe that says it's not appropriate for men or it's not guys' job. But when we live in a fatherless generation, it is... I think it is huge to have men involved. And if you have influence with men, please go after them and get them involved. For many of them, it will create a vision for what they can do in their home when they can do it at the church. Well, before we conclude, we have somebody with us this is their very kind of life and passion as well. How many of you guys have heard of Orange before? I'd like Stephanie Porter to come on up. Come on up and give us a little. She's like, all right. Come on up and give us just a quick little interview about what Orange is, and tell everybody to come visit you over at the in the Connection booth.
Okay, well, Orange is exactly the heartbeat of what these guys are talking about, and I'm sitting there taking notes right along with you and nodding, and it's like, yes, yes. You know, Orange leaders were very passionate about just that, integrating your strategy. So we not only are big picture vision things, and we have a lot of resources for that, you know, having the dialogue, we have a whole assessment book on how to do that, integrate your strategy, widen your circle, elevate community, all of these things that they're talking about. We believe in. But then we have the practical things as well. And we actually have the curriculum component that is birth through college, all the way building upon each other with a strategy in mind, a specific plan that what is the end in mind? And we're all aligning on the same page. So we as a company are just very passionate about that. And so we have a ton of tools and resources just to help equip leaders to be able to do this successfully. And I am with you. I work for a company. But it's not about that, and it's not about a curriculum. You can do this without our curriculum, and we love to talk to leaders about that as well and just equipping you with different things. Big on worship music. We have a whole website, amberskyrecords.org, all about getting a shared worship experience in the home. That's my biggest passion, so that's partly why I talk about it. I think music is cross-cultural, cross-generational. I mean, just huge, and starting as early as preschool, and embedding them with God's word and God's truth. And so we have some fantastic worship resources that are from cradle to college, and creating shared experiences. Now, I don't know if you guys do a shared experience in your church, but one thing that Orange has is called FX, Family Experience, where it's an actual service where kids and parents go together. And it's the big picture component that's supposed to integrate all of this, you know, all of it. So we have preschoolers in with us, worshiping with seniors who are also being greeters, who are, you know, students who are acting. And so basically we created this service so that we could get all of the volunteers in the same room on any given week.
The thing I appreciate about Orange is it did develop out of the context of a local church that was 15, 20 years in development. And so check them out. Guys, would you mind passing the mic and giving email addresses out? And maybe, and with your email, give your favorite resource. Just something that you like that would be helpful.
I'll give you some email addresses. We're both available at, I'm available at todd@solidlives.com. So todd@solidlives.com. And then Erin is the same thing, erin@solidlives.com. Favorite resource?
One of my favorite resources was a book by Becky Fisher, and she wrote, and it's about, what? Do you remember the name of it? I know, I knew it earlier, but something about raising children in the 21st century, but it's about children's ministry. And it's Becky Fisher, and she's a children's minister and doing phenomenal things around the world with children, amazing, amazing things with children. And she wrote a book about children in the 21st century and the children's ministry in the 21st century. And so that by far is one of my favorite resources that shaped how we thought about children, and it shifted our paradigm of what children are actually capable of.
Good.
Cool. Very awesome. I like that one too. My email address is lynns for Sawyer at newhopehilo.org. And I'm hard pressed whenever you say my favorite resource, because whatever I'm reading at the moment is my favorite.
So what
and
are
I'm
you
into
reading?
David Kinnaman's book right now. I love the You Lost Me book. If you haven't read that, do read that. It's amazing. But if you will email me, I have 3 pages of website links of resources that I love. So I will be happy to send those to you. Yes. Oh, sure. It's lynns@newhopehilo.org.
The name of that book is Redefining Children's Ministry.
in the 21st century, redefining children's ministry in the 21st
Jeff
century.
My name is Jeff Hamilton, Jeff at OC New Life, ocnewlife.org. Every youth pastor must read Building a Family-Based Youth Ministry. It talks just about an integrated, intergenerational approach to looking at the church. And guys, thank you. It's been a great time. You have been awesome. Thank you for coming. And it's time to move on to our next session. In here, I will be hosting again Dustin Brown from Canby, Oregon, and John Looney, as it relates to principles and practices of discipleship. So we start that in about 10 minutes. All right, guys. Hi. My name is Jeff Hamilton, and I have the privilege of facilitating our discussion today, the principles and practices of discipleship. And I am a pastor in Laguna Niguel, California, and a 25-year student ministry veteran. We're going to have a great discussion today. We talk kind of about the principles and practices of discipleship. How many of you guys went to the last session on integrating next-gen ministry? If that was about how to integrate the ministry, this particular session is going to be, what is the outcome? What's the desired outcome? When we start talking about discipleship, discipleship is really about making followers of Jesus and what that looks like in all of these different stages. And so with me to kind of drive the discussion, share some of the practices that they are involved with in their local ministry context, is to my far right is Dustin Brown. Dustin is the children's pastor at New Life in Canby, Oregon. His dad, Ryan Brown, directs the ELN program there in Canby, and Dustin is kind of grown up in ministry and is a product of principles and practices of discipleship firsthand.
Yes.
And so that's cool. Next to me, also to my immediate right, is John Looney. John Looney is an associate pastor at New Hope in Simi Valley, and he's also the director of their ELN program. And so it's kind of a neat process to see a pastor's kid who's been discipled now is back involved in ministry at the children's level as he kind of grew up in that process of discipleship at that local church. And John, as he's kind of talking about what this looks like as ELN helps to facilitate that. So hopefully it's going to be a good discussion amongst us. And if I had the chance to kind of define what we're talking about, is what does a follower of Jesus look like, especially at maybe the different stages of life. And so as we begin, I thought maybe I would just ask both Dustin and John, and you guys will need to pass the microphone back and forth. Got to speak into it, not for the sake of the room, but for the sake of the recording. What has discipleship looked like in your life, and how do you define being a follower of Jesus? We'll come back to what it looks like in your church context, but since it really flows kind of out of our hearts as leaders, out of our experience, let's start with Dustin. What has the process of becoming a disciple looked like for you, and how would you define being a follower of Jesus?
That's a really good question.
That's why they hired me as a professional.
It's good. having grown up in, as you shared, Jeff, in a environment of discipleship, I think for me, it's been
it's been through, you know, some programs and classes that I was a part of, some gear, just, you know, that was a program that was developed while I was a teenager. And but really following after Jesus was about the people in my life. It was about, you know, like my dad. It was about the pastor that I trained in ministry under, our children's pastor, Sammy and his wife Joanne, and other people too. And I went to college and people that I, you know, would ask questions of and probe, and so it was about relationships. That's what it looked like as I sort of became a follower of people. That helped me to know what it meant to be a follower of Christ.
So, very good. John, kind of same question.
Yeah, I think it's very similar. The way I view discipleship is that we set up programs and we try to be strategic about how we structure those programs to fit together, and we talk about the pipeline. But when you bring discipleship into it, I think those ministry types of scenarios, they're the structure in which you form relationships. Yeah. But it's still around the personal relationship that discipleship takes place. You know, I think of my own progress through, you know, all the way back to like King's Kids and putting on my little vest as a 5-year-old, being in youth group, all the way through Bible college and seminary, and all the way through. At each of those levels, from very elementary to very academic and heady, each of those tried to provide an environment where you could have interaction with people and leaders. And in any scenario, I think that's the foundation which discipleship has taken place in my life. And so as we look at the pipeline, and we look at programs, and we look at ministries, it's still about providing opportunities for people to connect eyeball to eyeball. And that, I think that's how discipleship has to take place.
That's always the thing about church, right? Really, everything that we're doing is giving people an excuse to get together. Because all of us have been a part of groups or lead groups or have facilitated a group that never accomplishes the task, right? We didn't get through the study. You know, why is it that the best groups that we put together never have to do with the study? Right? Oh, man, how would it go? Oh, it was great tonight. You know, somebody came and they started sharing and we started praying. Did you guys do their work? Oh, no, we didn't. We'll try to. And yet that was the best night, right? So when we're talking about integrated approach to discipleship, we want to have a strategy. We want to have a plan. But we're using the context of relationship for people to bump up together to become these followers of Jesus. I want to come back and maybe ask a question. I don't know if you guys have really formulated. It might be just a great kind of dialogue for all of us to have. When we talk about an integrated approach to discipleship, I think if we begin with the end in mind, what is a follower of Jesus? Dustin, John, either one of you, what would be a couple of traits that you would say define a follower of Jesus?
Well, I look at what Jesus required of the disciples. You know, they were the followers of Jesus, and if we make that our model, what it looked like was, it didn't look like having the best education. It didn't look like having the right answers or understanding even what was going on. It involved a dedicated passion to pursue the things of the Lord. And I think that breaks it very all the way down. But I think a follower of Christ is someone who has yielded their life to the lordship of Jesus in all that requires. And so then that plays out in what we would identify as our you know, our spiritual maturity and the disciplines of faith and reading our Bible. But those aren't the end. The end is that we're yielding our lives to the Lordship of Christ.
And you said, as it requires. You know, what's required of a follower of Jesus may be the same, but it's going to be applied differently in our age groups, whether it's adults, whether it is the children that we're serving and leading, and the families that are involved. If you were to kind of build on that, Dustin, especially as a children's pastor, how do you define at these different age groups, whether it's preschool, whether it's up, you know, first through third graders, the tween age group? What does that kind of look like, and how do you help that stage group move through towards that goal?
Yeah, sure. That's still things that, of course, I think everybody, I don't think anybody's ever done figuring it out. I don't think the formula has been defined yet. But I guess it's expectations for at each level, and knowing sort of what is, what is the, you know, like you had said, what's the end? What's the end that you have in mind? And I want to see kids, because that's my wheelhouse, who have an authentic outside of church relationship with Jesus.
What does that mean?
So it's a good question. it means that that their only experience with Jesus isn't within the walls of the church, but that it matters, their relationship with Jesus matters when they're at school and they're on the playground and they're thinking about how Jesus would want them to respond to a situation, or the way that they need to love the kid that's, you know, both being picked on and picking on them. You know, those sort of like real world, real life things that kids face. I want faith and Jesus to matter in those situations for kids.
And in that context, how do you intentionally try to cultivate that in them?
A big part, from a children's ministry perspective, is we try to partner with parents. We really try to, try to get on the same page as where parents are and come alongside them and say, you know, I can tell them about loving their enemy, but you're the one who's sitting with them when they're nursing a black eye.
Right.
So really, how can I help parents be the primary disciplers of their kids and partnering with them?
What have been some, in that particular area, what have been some wins that you've experienced, and what are some things that haven't worked so well?
Yeah, some wins have been just by communicating that to parents. We've seen parents really open up to that idea. I think as a parent myself, somebody who says, "Hey, I love your kids and I love you. Let me, not tell you what to do, but can I just help you?" I think parents are open to that, and it helps them to, have a voice into their lives. So that's been a win. And so they're receptive. You know, we've changed the way that we teach so that it's something that parents could partner along with easily. We're not expecting parents to be theologians. We just say, hey, here's some things. This is what we're talking about in the Bible. Here's some practical things that it could apply in your daily life. And so that's been some wins. Some challenges is that, families are busy and parents are they have jobs and they have, life outside of church. And for us, in a sort of a commuter town, a regular attender is somebody who is there twice a month. So, partnering with families it's just not always the easiest thing.
That is a national statistic that the most involved leader at your church at the highest level, they will only be in church on a Sunday 2.4 times in a month. And so it is even approaches the way that we intentionally discipleship, whether myself as a senior pastor thinking about how I structure series. You can't do series necessarily that build on each other if they're only going to get half of the curriculum. Each message has to kind of have its own standalone direct application if we're going to continue to move forward. With children's ministry, those types of, it affects the way that we equip parents to really disciple as well. John happened to know a little, since I happen to know a little bit about New Hope, but I'm probably going to expose my ignorance more than I am my attentiveness. You guys have been, as a team, in a process of kind of formulating what this whole next-gen thing looks like, cradle to college, ELN, young adult ministry. You've been the young adult leader there at New Hope for four years?
Yeah, well, we've been on staff for 3 years, but we did it for about 5 years before that. So,
right. Yeah. So quite a significant amount of time. Can you, have there been, as your church has taken a, tried to take a more intentional approach to both discipleship making, disciple making, and integrating ministry, how has that affected the way that you have viewed or maybe it has just affirmed the way that you and your wife have done ministry with the young adults in helping them become followers of Jesus?
Well, I think it's easy for the different ministries of the church to become islands of themselves. And I think a lot of times the quote-unquote big church will look at the youth group as, oh, it's just the youth, they're doing their thing. Or the young adult group, who even knows where they're at, but something's going on for them, right? Like they're meeting at Starbucks or something, we don't know. But an integrated approach means that, no, we're all aligned and we're moving forward in mission. And it's the mission that God has given our church and our community for this time. And so we're all going to align what we're doing to move in that direction together. And so, Jeff, I'm glad you started with outcomes, because the outcomes become what you gauge the progress of disciple-making by. And so you align your ministries, but you're aligning your outcomes so that you're leading people in a progression. And that's what we've tried to establish at New Hope, and that goes all the way through our ELN and into our normal church services. But some other aspects of integration is that we life journal as a church, and we don't life journal as a suggestion for the adults. We life journal from our little kids running around in Hope Town. We life journal in our Switch youth group. Our church is life journaling together, and so it aligns us. It brings us back into we're all studying the same things, and that's going to be on different levels. But God is moving us in one direction. And so those things that we can integrate everything that we're doing into one pathway, that's where you start to see an intentional mission being lived out.
I think those single-minded focuses are one of the things that really helps to define. We can get so easily caught up into very effective ministries and the problem is they actually bear fruit, but just enough fruit to justify the effort that you've put into it. It doesn't necessarily produce the overabundance of what we really desire to see outcome. And I think when I served as a student ministries pastor, there was a year when we were realigning our ministries. And the senior pastor brought a word to us. It just said, simplify and intensify. Wherever you narrow the channel, you increase the force, right? If you have a big river, it moves very slowly. You take that same amount of water and you channel it through a very narrow opening. That's where you get this rush that starts to move forward. And I think sometimes one of the things that prevents us from having good discipleship and integrated approach is that we do so many things. And so what we got to find is what's the word for our church, where it may be at New Hope, journaling, life journaling is one of the primary factors. We discussed in our last session another church whose primary method of discipleship is serving. Serving is one of the primary tools. Everybody does it. Everybody's involved, and it creates that central focal and funnel point for us. John, tell us a little bit about how the ELN factor. You guys are just in your second or third year, right?
Yes.
As the ELN.
Yeah, we're in our second year.
And tell us about what that. I'd like to talk about processes. So, Dustin, I'll give you some time to think. ELN seems to be a pretty direct process. If you don't know, you guys know what ELN is? Emerging Leader Network. Tim Mossholder is the director here for us. And Emerging Leader Network is an accredited institute program through Foursquare that is about intentional discipleship. Dustin comes from a big ELN church that has a great, amazing track record through it. It is a formal educational and experiential process that is usually for students early out of high school. And it is, again, one of these processes that helps us in this integrated approach for ministry. Because if we're creating followers of Jesus, sometimes you got to give them the opportunity to remove all the distractions and actually practice following him. Talk about ELN and its importance in the disciple-making process related to New Hope.
Well, I think we're churches 300 to 750 in this room, and I think that's an interesting group, because churches that size are just small enough to have very integrated, close, tight-knit relationships, and just large enough that we have to have some systems and processes in place or nothing gets done, right? And so there's kind of that struggle between the relationship and the processes. And what ELN is it's a very intensive discipleship program specifically geared towards young adults. And we focus, the focus is to take leaders and propel their leadership so that when they are done, the outcome is that they could step into youth ministry, they could step into being a worship leader, and they're geared up, they're trained and ready. Now, there may be some more steps along the way. They may go into Life Pacific or another Bible college, but our primary goal is not, ELN is not a rehab. It's not a right. Project for people that have flunked out of high school. It is to excel leadership and to create leaders. And so Foursquare has said, we want to create a pathway of discipleship to get young leaders into ministry and equip them. Now, I'm a Life grad, and I love Life Bible College, and we have sent people to Life. But my own experience at Life was graduating with a lot of biblical knowledge and not a lot of practical experience to apply it to. And so the model has been, ship your students to Life, let Life train them, and when they're done, then they'll go and serve in the local church. And what Foursquare has done is offer an alternate pathway that says, we will train people in service in the church so that they can be learning Bible but also applying right there in the local church and understanding the dynamics that take place in the local church. So,
And what you described right there, too, with the Bible college training is the key factor in the, and just with all things so that everything's out on the table, my dad was president of Life Bible College for 15 years. And I too am a life grad. But what was often missing, as John was saying, in that context, we said that discipleship is really primarily about relationships. And while you develop great affection for your instructors and the peer group that you've gone to school with, in that particular context, one of the things that is really missing is the side-by-side relationship mentoring that is more accessible in an ELM program. You could talk specifically about ELN at New Hope kind of being a leadership discipleship. Would that be true of ID, right,
mm-hmm.
in Canby?
Yes.
Is it focused towards vocational ministry, or is it focused towards a stop for young adults to really center themselves as disciples?
That's exactly right. That's what it is. And not that they do get ministry training and do, on the other side, have a two-year degree in Christian ministry and are certainly capable of serving. But really, even a lot of the immersion discipleship graduates are in some sort of ministry, but a lot of them aren't. A lot of them are,
They're not in paid or...
Yeah. They're not in vocational, quote-unquote, ministry, but they certainly are ministering wherever they are in different ways. So,
because we are all equipping people, whether they're in third grade or whether they're 23, for the call that God has on their life. We are all ministers, right? That's what the church is. Let's go back to children's ministry and talk about what are the processes of discipleship mm-hmm. that you guys have identified that you feel that you've had some wins with and that have made a big impact. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess it comes back to that idea of relationship. I know when we first started, when discipleship was becoming, it's always been a thing, but when it was becoming more of a thing in our church and the student ministries had been doing it for years, I was a little resistant when it came to kids because I thought, well, I don't want to just start a class for kids. You know, I do church for kids. We, this is an experience. Kids have fun, and I don't want to do a boring class for kids to have to go through. And then really was challenged by the Lord in just saying that it's not about doing a class. It's about relationship. And so, the big thing that we do is we start kids in a small group with a consistent leader. So somebody dedicates, they say, for 9 months, I want to be there every Wednesday night, and I'm going to invest my life into these kids. And that's made a huge difference. And even beyond the Wednesday night, we don't want people to commit beyond what they can, but they'll give them a call during the week, take them out to ice cream sometimes. And so it's a really, really amazing thing. That's been a huge win for us. And for me personally, we're not doing there are programs out there that focus more on like biblical knowledge and training kids in, memorizing books of the Bible and, a certain amount of verses and stuff. And I think that those are fantastic and great. But we really try to keep it simple and on the relationship so that kids from first grade are having the idea instilled in them that I need to be discipled. I need to be part of a small group and be learning from somebody. And that's translated up into the older elementary and into the student ministries, and it's been a really, really great thing. It's just part of the culture now.
Now, with kids, I'm the parent of a 16-year-old and a 14-year-old, and being a senior pastor, having been demoted to a senior pastor from youth ministry, one of the things I used to hate was to when parents would ask their kids, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I don't know that it really matters what you want to be when you grow up. I think it was always the wrong question. We have made a habit since our kids could talk, just started, what do you think Jesus wants you to be when you grow up? And how do you start to facilitate those kinds of discussions? Because my son and I, we've already been talking about, hey, listen, the first year out of high school, it is a tithe of your life. You're giving 1 year to the Lord to let him shape you. You're going to go to college for 4 years to try to find out whatever you do. How many of us have found out that, you know, my brother has a degree from San Diego State. He's an English major with a Shakespeare emphasis, and he's a music producer. We spend all this time and money at college. It's well worth it, but that doesn't always translate into your degree. I try to tell our children's leaders, you know, there's only one thing you are for the rest of your life, and that is a follower of Jesus. How do we begin to communicate that and train people? Because not everybody is going to end up going into vocational ministry, but we'd want to equip every person for their calling, and that calling begins with a commitment to follow Jesus. Let's talk about it in these different stage and age groups.
Yeah, of course. Two things I'd say. One is taking the time to have those conversations.
It's huge, isn't it? I'm sorry. I don't want to interrupt on Dustin at all. We're on our soap. All the times that we read about Jesus and the disciples, right? We're reading about Jesus and the disciples 3 years. How they leave their wives for 3 years, and we try to put this all together. We forget that three times a year, every Jewish male had to go to Jerusalem, and most of what we read in the gospel are accounts of these journeys that Jesus took with these guys, and they had to go back home and go fishing and go. I mean, we knew they have responsibilities. The second miracle Jesus did was to heal somebody's mother-in-law. So, you know, a lot of that happened very much in the context of what was given to us in the Old Testament. Talk about these things when you rise up, when you go to bed, when you go along the way, and inspiring and keeping on the forefront of our mind, having these kinds of conversations is one of the most important ways to integrate discipleship throughout the ages and stages of our ministry. Can you talk more about how to create, how do you encourage parents or your leaders to have those kinds of conversations?
Yeah. Well, part of it is the time spent in small groups, sitting around, having, you know, something to do. But like you said, I try to encourage our small group leaders, it's not about accomplishing the task, like going through a workbook with the small, you know, it's not about that. I mean, do that if you can, if this is something for you to work with, but it's about the time that you're spending with these kids and the voice that you have in their lives. As far as encouraging parents, it's just continuing to encourage parents. I believe that every parent wants to be a better parent. I think Kelly said something to that effect. I absolutely believe that. And so really just telling them, giving them permission. You can have these kind of conversations with your kids. You don't have to have all the answers. You don't have to even have most of the answers. Let your kids see where you struggle, where you question, where you're trying to still figure things out. That's going to facilitate a real faith in following after Jesus. If they can see you, how you walk and limp sometimes and crawl and are barely dragging yourself in this journey through Jesus. Not that you want to expose things to your kids, but just giving them that real look of being a follower of Jesus. I think it's just releasing. I don't have like, and if you do this thing with your parents,
right,
then they'll all become disciples of their kids. But I think a lot of times, just like I said, that permission, like, do it.
Absolutely, because believe it or not, we're so busy, we don't know to ask. We don't know to have those kinds of conversations. John, I'll stall for you for a second. I want you to answer the question: what are some conversations about following Jesus that shaped your life, and what are some conversations you've had with people that have impacted theirs? That relational, what are the contexts that those conversations have taken place?
Well, I think when you look at the context of young adults and all the way into...
But you were also a high schooler, and you were a high schooler at one time, because the reason why we're here is because people did this with us,
right?
as well. Right? Everybody is here in this room because, in fact, even as they're talking, maybe if you got a notepaper, I believe the Holy Spirit would bring back a couple names to you that would just said, who are people who had these kinds of conversations with you, who helped shape you as a follower of Jesus. Because even as you go back, it may just be a conversation, or maybe it was, I don't know that they said anything in particular, but they spent so much time with me, something rubbed off on me. If you can think about what helped to shape you, it gives us as leaders an opportunity to think about, well, how can I shape this? And that's why I asked John to talk about things that have shaped him and how he tries to then do that with the people that he's with.
Yeah, for me, it's when I look back and I think about those people, it's people who believed in me, number one, who encouraged me, and who empowered me. And that looks different at all different levels. That can take place from a five-year-old in T-ball and saying, hey, you can hit the ball, all the way up, you know, to grandpa. And believing, empowering, and really, you know, spending that time in young adult ministry, that looks like, hey, remember Jeremiah 29:11. You have no idea what is going to happen in your life, but God has a purpose and a plan for you. And you know, maybe ELN is a jumping off point to help discover that. And that's been, as people get immersed in that kind of a discipleship, that's oftentimes what it's all about, is just discovering who they are in Christ and what God has for them in their life. But for me, you know, I look back to from my youth leaders to all the way to my entry into ministry, it was people who encouraged me. They're the ones who I gave a voice to speak into my life, and that's when discipleship took place.
That's huge, isn't it? When you know somebody is for you, that's when you become open to letting them speak into your life. I'm going to ask you to name names. Give me three or four names of people who you feel did that to you.
Well, my youth pastor did that, Phil Hodapp. I think I was one of the youngest youth leaders in our youth group, and so that was an empowering. I believe in you. You don't have to possess certain, you know, great qualities. God is going to use you. And then right out of Bible college, Mike Larkin is one that I would say, this is a guy that fought for me and said, you know, promoted me into roles that were above me. And I was like, okay, Lord, this, I don't know how to do this, but you do. But all along the way, speaking in those truths. And that's a passion of Mike, is doing that in young leaders. And so he had a significant role in that as well.
Dustin, who are some people who encouraged and empowered you?
Back when I was just coming to faith and church, there was a guy at our church that was the maintenance and lockup guy. And he was also the Royal Ranger leader, because it was AG back then. And Stewie was his name. And he was just an old guy with a big beard. And he showed me how to tie a square knot. And that's really the main thing I remember about him. And but he cared, and he took time. And that, it was kind of the first time for me in the way that I grew up that there was like an adult who would show me something like that and what a difference that made. And then, of course, my dad, you know, and when he was growing up in ministry, the biggest thing is that I really got to see my dad in the raw. And what I mean is that there was never a veneer of like, you know, I've got this all together and I'm going to be, he was messed up and he was figuring things out. And he'd be the first to admit that too. And so being able to see a real authentic faith journey in my parent was, of course, huge. And then my mentor, Sammy Jameson, who let a way too crazy of a guy lead his group of kids and like really just released me and encouraged me, and always like he treated me like a son. He came over and helped me paint my house. And so that's a few people that
Jake Miranda. I was sixth grade going into junior high. My first adult friend. My Sunday school teacher. We're like, well, Jeff, I thought we were going to talk about integrating and the practices of print. This is what we're talking about. It is people. People are going to think about you in this way one day. When they think about discipling, they're going to think about, and the reward is so unbelievable. I ran into a brother here at convention. I was telling him how I'm only what 10 years older than him, maybe not even that much older. And I said, oh, I'm so proud of you. I pray for you every Sunday. We're Facebook buddies, even though he lives in Virginia. And how proud I was of he and his wife and them planting a church. And he goes, you know, I was called to ministry when you were speaking. You didn't even know. But you're just laying hands on kids at the end of camp one night. And just, you were praying for all of us that came forward, you know, that responded to the call to ministry. But you laid your hand on me. And that was the night that the Lord... And, you know, you interact with them so few times, but empowering and encouraging is a way that we integrate discipleship into our ministries. We can have, I'm grateful for Operation Solid Lives. If you have not taken a look at that as a process that is facilitated by The Rock, at least it stimulates some ideas. That resource is over in the Connection Center. And it helps. It's one of those excuses to get people together, right? Excuses to change. But remember, when it comes down to discipleship, it's the people who... I am so grateful when John said this. Discipleship is about really just encouraging and empowering people, believing in them. And discipleship, all of us in here are leaders as well. There are people who are not just doing our tasks, right? But they are people whom they will only encourage and empower as we encourage and empower them. Can each of you guys, because each of you work as a team, and then we're going to take some questions after this, talk about what it is to encourage and empower the team of people who are working with you and how that has a trickle-down effect as well, how it has to have a trickle-down effect.
Yeah, if you don't mind if I start.
Go right ahead.
I think that it's funny because our discipleship for student ministries, we say it's geared, it's getting equipped, anointed, and released, or empowered, and actually, now I'm forgetting exactly. But that equipping and empowering, I think the way that it really works out is that we really release leaders. Like, we do that, and then we let them do it. So many of our disciplers, especially of students, are students that have grown up being discipled and that are now leading small groups. In fact, my two of my main, like, solid small group leaders grew up in being discipled.
Right.
So I think that's a large part of it, is that really releasing them and letting that look the way that it needs to look, not releasing them in the sense of, okay, now you can come serve in the way that I am, you know, wanting you to and expecting, but like, well, what do you see? What do you want to do? What
right.
ideas do you have? And resourcing their dreams and so
that's always been my challenge as a leader in releasing people. I have always tended to focus on what they didn't accomplish or what they didn't do instead of celebrating the wins. When we have so many tasks to do, so many classes to oversee, so many copies to make, it's so easy to focus on what doesn't get done, because when it doesn't get done, it comes back to who? To you. Right? One of the sayings we have at New Life in a line with this is that we use things to get people done, not people to get things done. We use things to get people done, not people to get things done. Now, that takes a big adjustment, because sometimes that means that things slip through the crack more often than we would prefer. But that's a part of, right? I mean, we all experience that fallout. But that's the... process of encouraging and releasing people. How is it that it trickles down through your team, John?
Well, I think one of the key elements there in working with your team is, you know, if you're working with a team, they're there because they want to be there. And a lot, oftentimes we work with volunteers, and their heart is, where are we going? What do you want us to do? I think one of the key things is the empowering and the equipping, but it's the casting the vision.
Yes.
And again, that's where we come back to aligning our processes, yes, across the board for mission, but we want to be going somewhere. You know, we can encourage and empower people in a self-help group, but disciple making is the root is there is discipline, right? So there's some standards that we want people to get hold of. There's some things that we want them to live their lives by. And so as a team, we want to be living out those items as well. So there's some standards in your team that you're encouraging people and empowering people to live up to. And that trickles down to, yes, who they're serving. But the vision is what drives people to want to say, I'm going to be a part of that. I see where we're going. I see how Timmy is going to get to be a man of God. And I think when we can grab hold of that, and I think that looks different in every environment, how that pipeline actually takes place. But it's that aligning, and when your team can grab hold of that, I'm going to live these things out because I get to be part of the bigger picture of getting this child to live the rest of their life for Jesus Christ. I think that's significant.
It's huge. And thank you for bringing that back out. In our last session, we spent some time on vision and values. Values are not just what you believe. Values are what you do. And learning how to live those out in community, everybody on the same page, is huge. We're going to take some time that you can ask Dustin and John some questions. I'm going to bring the microphone to you. That way your question can be recorded on the audio that we're making of this session. Anybody have any questions that they want to start? I'll go back here to the back. Just for the sake of the recording, give us your name and the church where you serve.
Rick Martin at Sunnyside Foursquare Church in Clackamas, Oregon. And my question is, how do you guys in your next gen ministry, how do you work with each age level? I mean, do you meet as teams, or how does that look in your churches?
Well, it used to look like, last year, it looked like each ministry ran its team, met on its own, and whenever they felt like they needed to. In the last year, we have brought all of our next-gen ministries under one umbrella that we do quarterly training where we get together. Vision is cast for where are we going as a church in this season for this quarter, and what does that look like? How is that going to be lived out throughout our next-gen ministries? And then, so that vision is cast together as a group, and then we'll break out from there into specific age-specific groups to discuss how we're going to live that out in the ministries in which we serve.
And that's your whole team, volunteer leaders and everybody.
That's everybody. That's our pastors, our volunteers, everybody's there.
As much as I have tried to run a church without meetings, it is not possible.
Yeah.
And especially with people who are serving, it's so hard. You feel almost guilty asking them again. But without it, again, it's an excuse for people to get together. And when you have them together, values, vision starts to get shared.
My name is Jen Klein. I'm from the River Church in Durango, Colorado. I've been a children's pastor for 3 years, and I have a team of about 52 volunteers. And my challenge is structuring my leadership I have a family. I have 3 kids and a husband. And I'm full-time ministry. So I need to disciple my leadership at a manageable, in a pace that's sustainable. how do you structure your ministry so that you are pouring into the right amount of people who then pour into the right amount of people who then affect your children? Does that make sense? I'm struggling with that.
What I would say is I try to, and I don't actually lead as I'm part of a big team, but I don't lead even as a big a team as that. So I understand that there's unique challenges when you're talking about, you can't be a personal discipler of 52 people. It's just not possible. But we do, I think for me, it goes back to time spent. And so there are a handful, I'm feeling drawn to our small group leaders specifically, the ones that have kind of taken that, dedicate every single week. And there's only, four of them. So it's not a huge group because small groups are just a kind of upcoming thing in our area. So I stay late with them sometimes. Not every night. I have three girls under six. So certainly not most of the time. But there will be times where, after a Wednesday night, we'll just kind of hang out and we'll talk and we'll pray together. We'll do, it's little things like that. Finding the balance between, the church family that you're ministering to and your own family, I think is, I don't know that's ever not a struggle to find that balance, but I don't know. I guess I don't have it figured out, but if that's an encouragement to you, just that if you could find that few. And it doesn't even have to be, exactly structured as a whole trickle down. I guess that's what I'm kind of seeing at. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to you want them all to be. And one thing that we emphasize is that everybody is involved in discipleship, but it doesn't have to be under you. So, I have students that serve with us that are awesome, but they're not discipled by people that I discipled necessarily. They're discipled by, our student pastor or somebody that they've discipled, So as long as they're involved in a discipleship for their own spiritual growth, then, sort of working together that way.
I was trying to find a quote from Pastor Rick Warren, said something to the effect that Jesus inspired the thousands invested in the 70 mentored the 12 and changed the 3. It was something like that process. And again, that's why doing church as a team by Pastor Wayne is the concept is right, and breaking things down into pieces, because even those discipleship opportunities, it shouldn't all rest with you. But you give people an excuse to get together, and then they got to rub off on each other. There was one more question.
My name is Chris Machuku from the First Square Church in Efuru, Nigeria. My question has to do with volunteers. One thing I notice is some people like to hang out in the next gen ministry, like the children's church or the teenagers' church. They don't really want to work. Like a mother has a baby and she just feels, I'll come and sit here while I still have this child to look after. So she's not there to minister to the children. She's there principally because she has a baby she wants to oversee. So a lot of them tend to come to those places. How do you handle such volunteers, people who are not contributing much to the ministry? They're just coming there and taking up space. Do you ask them to leave or...
This is where the rubber meets the road, man.
Well, I'm not sure what cultural implications are involved in this. But, again, to me it comes down to we want to be the most effective in the ministry that's taking place. And if that person understands the vision of what we're trying to accomplish, regardless of what age group that is, the most effective we can be is for our volunteers to be all in on that vision, or they're not part of that. And that's the standard that we have to hold our volunteers to. That's hard sometimes, because it's hard sometimes when you don't have somebody that you need volunteers in your children's ministry.
Exactly right.
Right? But the vision has to be there that, hey, this is what we're after because it's a value. and because the next generation is worth the best that we have to offer. And so you can be a volunteer in our children's ministry. We would love to empower you and share our vision with you, and you can be involved. But if not, people are going to wonder, why are they there? They're not all in. What's taking place? So I, yeah.
Can I add just one quick thing to that, too? I think that, at least in my own experience, it's been about creating levels of opportunity. Because, you know, that person that maybe just wants to come and be there with that one baby, that's where they may start. But in a discipleship process, that may not be the end. They may get a passion for babies from the time spent doing that. So I guess you have to figure out what works for your church, your community, your culture. But, you know, really, like, because I'll have a parent who, you know, it's like, hey, I want to just come and be in there and help out. And as long as they pass a background check, but then as long as they are contributing some, even if they're like, the thing that they like to do is just sit and color at the table with kids, then that's something. That's a start for that person, possibly. They're not the person that's going to be up there teaching, and I'm not going to rely on them for anything necessarily, but I do want to give place for, you know, some of those, you know, less mature leaders. But you know, anyway, well,
if I can play with your head for a minute, I wonder if the stories of the 12 that we have are just the only 12 that said yes. And so there are various levels, again, where people want to get involved with. And I love the idea that we can continue to create opportunities for people to get infected. And when they do with the ministry vision, when they begin to be discipled, that happens.
But I would caution, not just hanger outers.
No. Yeah. No, and, you got to have something to do.
Yeah. And you know, I don't know how this translates to Nigeria, but you know, in churches our size that we're talking about here, you know, our children's ministry, when our services start, it goes on lockdown. And it becomes a security, it's a liability to have, we don't have hanger outers. You're there for a purpose and you belong, or you're not there. And so it's just something that, again, we have to be working with all ages, we have to be so conscious of that at all times.
Especially here in the States.
Absolutely.
Even as it relates to our Foursquare, as to our Foursquare insurance issues, really. I'm going to ask same kind of question that I did to the others, as you give your email address out, I'd also ask you maybe to recommend a favorite resource, maybe something you're reading right now, or something that affected you in this process of helping to make followers. So while Dustin's scrambling, John, you already see it clicking off in his
Well, head. I'll also just share a resource with you that...
and will you give everybody your email address?
I will. I'd be happy to. My email address is jlooney, just the letter J, Looney, at newhopewestcoast.org.
West Coast?
We're not willing to just take a city or a county. We're going to take the whole West Coast. So newhopewestcoast.org.
Up to the 55 freeway.
That's right. And we'll hand off the baton. One of the things that our team is going through right now is the book called Circle Maker.
Mark Batterson.
Yeah, and just a great, great, challenging book on really going after the dreams that God has given you and those promises and how that fits into our prayer lives. It's been really... It's been kind of what our team is rallying around right now, and it's been a great resource for us.
Good. Dustin?
That's great. You guys have seen orange stuff around. That's sort of what, you know, from a children's ministry perspective, that's what kind of inspired me, especially, you know, it gave me language to the things that I was feeling in my heart when it came to ministering to families. So I recommend checking out that stuff. In fact, I'm the only one at our church that uses actual Orange curriculum. So it's not about, you know, plugging into a program, but as far as if you want, it's a good resource for helping to articulate, things. And they have a new book out called Lead Small, and it's about it's real simple. In fact, it looks thick, but it's got, like, you know, lots of white space in there. And it's something, it's just, it's five principles for, like, small groups and leading discipleship environments like that, that apply to all age groups, even like preschool age. So it's, I'm really loving going through this and can't wait to go through this with my team. So that's what I'm recommending.
Email address?
Oh, sorry. D, the letter D, and then brown, you know, like the color, at Cambie Foursquare, all one word, and for, well, you guys know Foursquare.
C-A-M-B-Y.
Yeah, C-A-N-B-Y, Foursquare.com.
A couple other resources that I thought of while he was talking about. Our own ELN website is, where our ELN is called United, New Hope United. So you can go to newhopeunited.org and see what we're doing there. The ELN website is Emerging Leader Network. That's all spelled out. Emerging Leader Network. Dot. I think it's com. It's either com or org. So. I think it's com. And so those are a couple websites. There's also just recently we ran across a website called rightnowtraining.org. And it's a subscription base, but it's based on attendance size. But it's it opens you up to online training for your teams. And so this would be more for discipling your teams and training your teams. But you can, you have access to all different kinds of small group materials, discipleship stuff that your team can log on and watch online. You can do messaging, message boards, all kinds of tools and stuff on there. But you can also upload your own content and do your own training videos, and it's a host site for that. And you forms for people to respond. There's just all kinds of tools on there. So it's great. That's a great tool.
And again, my name is Jeff Hamilton. Jeff, J-E-F-F, at OC, as in the OC, ocnewlife.org. And our ELN address is dive, D-I-V-E, diveoc.org. And this is an older book, probably written mid-80s, but you can still find it around, written by a guy named Bill Hull, H-U-L-L, called Jesus Christ, Disciple Maker. And it just talks from this pastor's perspective about how Jesus made disciples. And it's a easy but challenging to your heart resource. Thank you for coming. Thank you for your time. I want to pray over you as we dismiss. Lord, we thank you that each one of us here have been called to be followers, have been invited to be followers, and we've responded. We've been entrusted with the responsibility to make followers. Let us do it effectively. Let it have eternal implications that expand your kingdom and bring glory to your great name. May every church and every ministry, every family that is represented here, may it be blessed with the favor and the grace of God as we share this journey of following you together. Amen. 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 Thank you, everybody.